Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Welcome, everybody. Happy Monday to you. It's June 13th, and I'm calling in to do the radio program from Sedona, Arizona. I'm privileged to be one of the speakers up here at the Arizona Mortgage Lenders Association, AMLA's annual convention. It's in the beautiful hills. Talk about gorgeous country up here at Sedona. We're at the Hilton Sedona Resort and Spa. You've never been up here, get up here and take a look at this country. It is spectacular. And so good to have so many. So we were at the reception, opening reception yesterday or last night, and so many people walked up to me and say, listen to your program all the time. That is so encouraging. I know anytime we go to conferences, we get hearing that more and more. We want to say thank you for being a regular listener. We appreciate you passing the word around. We are doing everything we can to bring you in a concise relative format, everything about that's going on. Again, we're mortgage professionals ourselves, so it's mortgage professionals preparing my content for mortgage professionals. So we appreciate you being with us again today. And let's start off as we do each and every week at the top of the hour with Joe Farr giving us an update on interest rates. Joe, what's going on in the markets today?
Well, we got an update going today, as we have for many days lately. But we're up 4/32.
Good.
No real economic news to speak of. The Dow has been up a little bit, but has turned lower here recently, and we should see, if you haven't already, we should see some favorable price changes. This morning we opened with the market down about 4/32, so we've seen an 8/32 or a quarter point improvement price from say 9 o'clock this morning. So should be a good day for you.
Could be a good day. Good. Glad to hear it. We don't need any bad news when we're at a conference. Let's keep it good. What happened last week? Last week's were essentially the rates were fairly unchanged, were they not?
Yeah, there was not a lot of movement net for the week. We did reach a new low for the year, middle of the week, and then saw some of that evaporate on Thursday as people started taking not only taking profits, but also had a relatively weak 30-year Treasury auction. Most of last week, we saw movement in MBS prices that were kind of playing off the movement in the stock market. We saw some a lot of volatility both ways. In fact, last week, one of the larger correspondents, it seemed like a week without a lot of change, but during the week and intraday, there was a lot of change, and we saw I think one of the large correspondents had 9 price sheets last week, so. So it's still a little
busy
volatile
day for the secondary department.
It's tough to keep up with it. Last week, the Treasury auctions were the big events. Not a lot of economic news came out during the week. We had the 3 and the 10 and the 30-year, and both the 3 and the 10 were sort of average auctions, and the 30-year, which happened on Thursday and helped contribute to a drop in prices, MBS prices, was relatively weak. But, you know, it's amazing anyone's buying these things at all when you think about it. The 10-year yield's below 3%.
That's amazing.
That is amazing. And it just kind of highlights the concerns that are in the market right now. When people are taking 3% yields, it's the government guarantee that they want. And, the uncertainty over Greece and the debt limits and the QE3 or not. And where's this economy going to go? So we're seeing a lot of shift from riskier assets to more secure assets, and therefore we've seen a rally both in the Treasury markets and the MBS markets over the last few weeks.
Yeah, lots of information. Then there's stuff going on over in Europe as well.
Yeah, Greece is sort of the highlight there, and the question is, are they going to bail them out or are they not? And if they don't, what happens in the world markets when a government actually does default on their loans, on their debt? So lots of uncertainty there.
And then the debt limits, QE, you know, is there a QE3? When are we QE2? Or QE2 is just wrapping up.
Yeah, it's supposed to end this month.
And this month.
You know, the Fed's not saying there'll be another round, at least not anytime soon, but there's sure people in the marketplace talking about the potential need for one.
Well, I think we're going to be getting in the hot topic segment. We're going to talk about a little bit about what you and I were, and Andy and Alice were talking about on the pre-program show about Jamie Dimon's comments about, you know, has this done any good? That was a really interesting discussion, folks. You're going to want to stay tuned to that. What about the phase beige book? You say, you know, slow growth and no inflation is pretty much the consensus.
Yeah, that's pretty well known. It did. The beige book was released this week, or last week, I should say, and it reported slow growth in the overall economy. In fact, negative growth in several of the markets, and inflation still in check, which is a great environment for very low mortgage rates.
Good for mortgage interest for the mortgage business. If we can, we don't like what necessarily is driving it. Well, what do we got in tap for this week? Coming, any major announcements coming up?
Well, actually, this week's going to be a big week. We've got both CPI and PPI coming out on Tuesday and Wednesday. Also on Tuesday is retail sales, which is always a big event. Industrial production comes out on Friday. Then a couple of the smaller regional manufacturing indexes come out. So, yeah, it's a lot of information. Could create more volatility. I mean, just like today, without any information, we've seen a quarter point improvement in price over the day so far, and look for volatility to remain pretty much a common event in the marketplace.
So volatility, especially, and I think one point that you made, and then Dan had made to me when you were gone, is that, you know, this, we are at the lowest rates, but if we see any indication that interest rates could be jumping up, there's going to be a move up quickly in rates and a drop in prices. It could be significant, be a bit of a knee-jerk reaction. So people got to have your service. Joe, thank you so much for bringing us today's update. Folks, we'll be right back after this brief break.
Economic uncertainty has created a tremendous amount of market volatility for the past few weeks. Intraday price changes seem the rule rather than the exception. Have you been surprised by a midday price change? Have you been frustrated as you locked a loan just ahead of a price movement? Found it difficult to explain to a customer why the rate you quoted is no longer available? MBS Quoteline can eliminate these frustrations. MBS Quoteline monitors Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and Ginnie Mae mortgage-backed security prices in real time. It makes the information conveniently available on your desktop, smartphone, or by email or text message. These are the same prices used to set mortgage rates each morning and to issue midday price changes when significant movement occurs. With MBS Quoteline, you'll never be out of touch with the market,
whether you're in the office or on the road.
See for yourself what MBS Quoteline can do for you. Go to mbsquoteline.com to start a risk-free two-week trial.
mbsquoteline.com.
646-716-4972. The Lincoln on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lincoln.
Good to have you back. We're going to be talking later in the program, by the way, talking about the future mortgage banking and my presentation that I'll be giving while I'm here in Arizona. But let's talk about the traffic report, the legislative update on all that's going on. It's a never-ending topic, Alice. Alice Alvey of Mortgage U, good to have you with us again as you are each and every week. So appreciate you and your staff and staying on top of all this. What you got for us this week?
Well, you know, there's always something, right? So
always
here we are
something.
Again. And, you know, last week Mitch was on the show explaining QRM, and thank goodness, you know, the day after that show, the comment period was extended until August 1st. So we have a little bit of breathing room here for you all to be able to get on it, get out there, and respond to the qualified residential mortgage credit risk retention proposed rule that's out there. So it's referred to the credit risk retention. Here's some quick pointers I guess I want to offer you up now. So I know there's some press out there a little bit from Paul Mwalo from the National Mortgage News floated out an article there that he thinks, and that he, without giving away any hints is what he says, to the identity, that there seems to be some ideas that perhaps QRM may not get the legs that people expect. I think the headline that's floating around the internet is, you know, is QRM dead? Don't don't let yourself get all excited about that, I guess, is the message we have for you today especially. We've just now got people into commenting. The number of comments out there is surprisingly low. You need to get out there and post your comments. So here's how to do this. Want you to do it by email. That's the easiest way, so you don't have to, you know, try and surf your way through any kind of a website. Send an email to regs.comments@federalreserve.gov. So regs.comments, yes, that's plural, COMMENTS, at federalreserve.gov.
Okay.
Here's some points I want you to consider when you're commenting. You know, there's a comment out there from a bank executive and using the terms like, you know, this is ridiculous, this is catastrophic, and, you know, inflammatory statements like that will get your letter scanned and filed. You need to focus on a few things that are very factual, and here's some suggestions. The Dodd-Frank Act does not say one word about QRM needing a loan to value. That's just fact. So by QRM trying to define a loan to value, it, just by that point, has stepped beyond what the Dodd-Frank Act had indicated would be done. The Dodd-Frank Act itself just makes recommendations for things such as a payment ratio, a debt ratio, but clearly gives the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau authority to say, let's make it product-based. So certainly we can be fine with, you know, if you want to say an option arm or unusual products that are already defined in the non-traditional lending guidance that we already have, that those are not a QRM, then maybe that's an easier approach. So that's another thought. Here's another one. The Dodd-Frank Act requires a macroeconomic study of the impact of QRM. Shouldn't that be done ahead of it? Shouldn't we have an idea before we put these in place what the potential economic and social impact this will have on our industry? That's the other good thing about this. We've got consumer groups aligned with mortgage industry and real estate industry groups on this one, that the way this is written is really harmful. So those are just a couple of tidbits I guess I want to throw out there. You know, if you're shy about commenting or, you know, just here's a, those are a couple ones I want to just throw out. Just a heads up, too, about loan officer compensation under Dodd-Frank while we're just talking about Dodd-Frank. July 21st, we have a few deadlines coming in. That's when the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is supposed to be put in place. And I just want to give you all a heads up that loan officer compensation isn't, you know, was settled under Reg Z, Truth in Lending. We still have the piece under Dodd-Frank that will require us taking another look at liability. Remember, Dodd-Frank had an extra layer that the loan officer could be liable for three times the fee if compensation was not violated the law, you know, if they
yeah.
were paid inappropriately. So and that would be under the anti-steering provision. So we're going to watch more for that for you. Here's another big thing. We have two bills. Keep in mind there are two. I think, Dave, in my write-up, I might have made a reference that one replaced the other. We have House Bill 1977, the FHA Reform Act of 2011. Now, this has been written by Maxine Waters, Democrat, and actually I like her version a lot better than I like the FHA Rural Regulatory Improvement Act of 2011, written by Republican Biggert out of Illinois. Biggert's is just a draft proposal. That's the one that's got everybody scared because it talks about changing FHA to be 5% down. It talks about taking off the cap for annual MIP. It has a lot of changes in it that are harmful. It would change and remove the floor for county limits, so a lot of counties across the country would lose their maximum loan limit of 271 and they would be lower. We want all that bill, that draft bill, just gone.
Gone.
It's 44 pages. I like Maxine Waters, 19 pages. Right?
Never thought I'd like to see the day we'd be saying we like something that Maxine Waters does. But
I know.
God,
well,
at
I
least
should have said that.
It
but
sounds
you know
like in this area she's getting it right. That's good.
Yeah, in this one we're okay, right, because it doesn't have – it just simply says FHA needs to conduct a make sure that they're watching – if claims go too high if their capital reserve falls too low, that then they have to look at a way to potentially mitigate that through increasing down payment for certain groups. The one good thing you might really like out of this bill, again, it's H.R. 1977, is that the last part of it says it would have that all loans are eligible, all FHA loans would be eligible for a MIP refund. Right now, you only get a credit if it goes FHA to FHA. Back in 2004, FHA did away with if you actually, I think it was later than that. But the FHA did away with, if I went FHA to conventional, then I no longer got a refund. And they would, this bill would reinstitute that and be money for taxpayers. So who got FHA? So that's a good part. I don't know if the fund can handle that or not, but, you know, we're all for giving the refunds back if the fund can handle it.
Absolutely.
Now there would be an extra responsibility on wholesalers. This is a catchy point. In the bill, in both bills, whether you go with the Republican or Democrat version, in both bills it references that a wholesaler would be responsible for reporting any time they terminated a relationship, either with a principal agent or a sponsored originator.
Interesting.
They would be responsible for reporting that to FHA. And I think that's a tough call, because sometimes you just, you know, terminate a relationship for lack of volume or
lack of
quality.
Volume and activity, yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Nothing related to, you know, something that would harm the FHA fund. So that certainly needs some additional research on Congress's part before they put something like that in place. All right, what else are we watching? We are watching that there is another bill, House Bill 1754, that would be allowing FHA to permanently increase their maximum loan amounts, which we like that. We want to keep it there. Qualified mortgages, that comment period is open until July 21st, so make sure you spend some time, again, responding to the QM. There's a significant need, I think, to bring automated underwriting into the limelight of what is a qualified mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
Fannie and Freddie have set what is a qualified mortgage. How can we set standards that are less than or more stringent than what Fannie and Freddie will take as an approved eligible? I was talking to a customer this morning. They said only 9% of their Fannie Freddie mortgages met QM standards. Those are the numbers you all need to do. Analyze your pipeline. Take a look at the last 2 years of loans, conventional, and say, what percentage of those loans would actually meet the QM restrictions that they're trying to set today? I think that'll be a big message for the impact to housing. So keep in mind, implementation dates, July 21st. There's a new ECOA disclosure, and I guess I should clarify, adverse action notice gets expanded to include some more additional credit score information. And July 21st, make sure your customers are getting a risk-based pricing disclosure that shows the score used in the underwriting decision. Those are two implementation dates, July 21st. So, Dave, that's about, I think, all anybody can handle for one day, right?
I've got my iPad up here looking and you're scrolling up and down on your list of your notes, and there's certainly so much more we could talk about. So I guess people just have to tune in next week to see what the latest is.
Yeah. The helicopter's flying away now.
Traffic
report's over.
Thank you so much, Alice, for you and your staff doing all that you can to bring us this information. We appreciate you keeping up on it. Folks, we're going to be right back after this brief break.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals
providing classroom and web-based delivery
and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees both live and online on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lincoln on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's David Lincoln.
Welcome back, everybody. This is David Lincoln, Lincoln on Lending. We're excited to be bringing this to you live from Sedona, Hilton Sedona Resort. I'm out here at the AMLA Conference, the Arizona Mortgage Lenders Association Conference, and we're going to be talking a little bit later in the program about my talk about the future of mortgage banking. It's going to be very important, but before we do, let's go get to the profit doctor and find out what's ailing the bottom line. Andy, KPIs,
hey,
good to have you on the program. Talk to us. Give us some ideas. Help our listeners get to what they can do to fix what's ailing them.
Well, you know, Dave, right now here in Austin, it's a clear blue skies on its way to 100. And you're in Sedona on your way to, what did you say, 80?
80-something. It gets cool at night, and
how's
the views here
fair?
Are spectacular.
I'm trying to figure this out. How does it you ended up in Sedona and I'm still in Austin? I don't know about that one. Well, I'm glad that you're going to be talking about the future of mortgage banking there and here on the show later on. That's an amazing topic, and I know you've got a lot of really insightful points to bring out. And as we start talking about the future of mortgage banking, one of the things that's essential to talk about are some of the factors. What are the keys to success in mortgage lending? What are some of the things that people need to watch for? And I'm going to rattle off just a couple of them just here real quick. You know, having good KPIs, having a solid sales management process.
KPIs, going to have to help those listeners that haven't been with us all along. KPIs stand for?
Key performance indicators.
Thank you.
Yes, and you want your key performance indicators displayed in a dashboard. So solid sales management, you got to have good activity tracking, you got to have technology training, and if you're moving technology around, you got to have really solid conversion planning, you got to have an ROI focus, you got to know your cost per loan, your profit per loan, you got to have accurate secondary marketing gain reporting, and also you got to have accurate pull-through reporting, you got to have good call reports. So all these things all come together to make a company successful, but I'm gonna drill down in just a couple of them. I know that's kind of a long list, so just a couple of key critical elements, and I'm going to start by talking about data accuracy. And you know, Dave, you left Austin yesterday, and you landed in wherever you, Sedona or wherever it was near there that you got
Phoenix,
there.
Phoenix, yep.
Okay, in order for that to happen, there was some accurate data that transferred. The pilot's airspeed indicator and flight navigation information and altitude indicator, the altimeter, all that information gave the pilot, along with the compass reading and everything else, the information they needed to get you from Austin to Phoenix or wherever safely. So they relied on accurate data and success. You're there safely. Everybody else is. We're all happy.
Yes.
You know, you remember.
Sure.
Well, Dave, you know, you remember a couple of years ago, we had this big stimulus package come through the government. Congress came out and said, we're going to pass $1 trillion. Can you even say that? $1 trillion in stimulus, and we're going to launch all these projects, and we're going to create all these jobs, and we're going to keep unemployment from rising above 9%. And they were wrong. They were just wrong. They were wrong.
Wrong.
And guess why? Was there bad data? I mean, why was it that was wrong? Bad assumptions. Something went wrong for it to not be what they thought it would be. And in mortgage banking, we have to do some of the similar things all the time. We have to listen to you, predict the future. We have to predict activity in our business, and we have to use data that's accurate to make decisions. So a couple of quick points. And I know you and I have talked about this issue here on the effect of growth on a mortgage bank many times before. So for all the folks listening.
We have, yes.
Yeah. Here's a quick example of bad data impacting a mortgage bank as it relates to funding and cash flow and payroll. So, you know, as you know, when a mortgage bank adds a bunch of new branches and gets a bunch of new volume going, you know, that's good. That's a good thing, right?
Great thing, yep.
You know, because we're going to make more money. And sometimes investor purchase timeline can extend for various reasons. I mean, you never know. It could be file quality. It could be they're just busy. It could be they want to take a vacation. Who knows? But investor timelines extend. So, as most warehouse line lenders who are lending the money to the mortgage company to make the loans, they require the mortgage company to have a little bit of their own cash in that loan. So the mortgage company is putting a little bit of their own money in each loan as it's closing. So as the volume increases that a mortgage bank's making, that means more of their cash is being put into the loans that are now being, quote, held for sale. And then if the investor timeline extends and that they're not purchasing as quickly, then that means the mortgage bank's money is going to be tied up in the loans for longer. Well, what happens if there's a payroll before the money comes back from the investor and there's not enough cash to make payroll?
Great point.
Employees don't take IOUs.
That doesn't work well.
This is not a good thing. This is really a bad thing. And,
the volume,
you know,
can come back and bite you if it's not, you know, if you're not planning
exactly.
for it.
Exactly. And, you know, Dave, you and I helped the client deal with this. We've actually seen this happen where a company grew too fast, had all kinds of profit built into their loans, didn't have enough cash to run payroll. It can happen. It's important. This is part of the future of mortgage banking, is predicting outcomes and having good systems to help you manage your business well. Now, another area, Dave, is the pipeline. You know, we all talk about pipeline management, getting good data out of the pipeline so you know what loans you have in there, what the status is, all this stuff. And for the future of mortgage banking, one of the big challenges mortgage lenders are going to embrace and have to implement is extracting the secondary marketing gains that are priced into each loan and converted into profit. It's just going to have to. And as most mortgage bankers are growing, hedging is going to become more and more a reality for most lenders. And so the fundamentals of hedging are really straightforward. You know, Dave, we just taught a class on this a couple weeks ago. You know, as the loans go up in value, the hedge goes down in value, the margin in the loans are preserved, everybody's happy. And, you know, right now today, the current pricing benefit of a short-term mandatory, a mandatory commitment versus the best efforts is about, on FHA production, it's about 60 basis points. So let's assume that all in, all net, it's just 40 basis points. On a $10 million FHA pipeline, that's $40,000 a month.
Wow.
$40,000 a month more just by going from best efforts to mandatory. So, you know, the basic strategy is, rather than do the best efforts, we're going to sell a 4 TBA MBS security, and then we're going to pair out of the security and deliver into a short-term mandatory commitment, or we'll assign the AOT. But either way you look at it, you know, for a $10 million pipeline, we just added 40 grand. You know, I'll split it with you, tell you what, Dave, what do you think about that?
Like
so,
it. Yeah.
So here's the tricky part. The most essential element is to accurately predict the volumes of loans that will really close, because we're looking into our crystal ball and we're saying, we think we're going to have $10 million of loans close in the next 30 days. So we go out and we sell forward a $10 million TBA MBS. Now, once we've sold that, that's our position. It doesn't change in value unless you buy it back or assign it. But you got interest rate risk associated with that amount. So, and we did that because we think we're going to have $10 million of loans coming out of our pipeline. But what if our pipeline doesn't close? What if the status codes are wrong? What if the rates in the pipeline are wrong? Big, big losses. Really bad things can happen if the data coming out of the pipeline isn't accurate. So the accuracy of the details of the pipeline, you know, it's foundational. You've got to have accurate data in the pipeline, or the hedge isn't going to be accurate. And so if the data entry people, the processor, let's say, the processor entering loans, entering data into the origination system, if they don't put the status codes in wrong or any other element, or if the pull-through data is inaccurate because of a systems interface issue, you're going to have bad data, you'll have a bad hedge, and you'll have a loss. Now, we've got lots of clients all around the country that do this well, so it can be done well, but one of the things that they do is they check their data and they train their staff, because if you train your staff and if you make certain your LOS interfaces are right and running well, then you're going to have good data, you're going to have efficient operations. Some of the clients we work with that are the biggest companies who you think would have the biggest trouble because they're so big actually do this really, really well, and they do it because they check, they test, they verify, they get their systems people involved, and they make certain things are running right. Just a couple of other quick points here, Dave, and then I'll wrap up. We had a client recently who added a bunch of new branches. This is happening all over the country. People
yep.
are adding new branches. It's a good thing.
It is a good thing. Yeah, people are definitely looking to grow, to add branches to kind of get back to hopefully getting some net growth instead of net loss in the production. Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly. So they added this new branch, and they made the assumption that the status codes the branch were using were the same status codes that the other branches were using. So they took all this data, and they threw it in the secondary marketing reports, and they ran their hedge. Well, guess what? The definitions of the status codes were different. They were using numbers, and the codes were different, and the data that went to secondary was wrong, and the hedge was wrong, and there was more fallout than they anticipated, had a loss, have recovered. But it was all because they made an assumption about data accuracy. You know, it's like checking for data accuracy is like buying insurance. You know, it costs a little to check, but it costs a lot less than the losses
Great
you're going to have when your data is wrong. So just check before you have a loss. It seems very simple, and I think it's a fundamental point that we're going to see moving forward for those that are successful in mortgage banking in the future, as you talk more about this as we move on. So, you know, have your staff trained. Have the interfaces checked. Don't just assume because it looks good that it's right. Mortgage banking is driven by data, whether if it's disclosures or underwriting worksheets or, you know, doc draws or funding requests or just on and on and on and on, lock requests, from lending to closing to the sales process. Mortgage banking is just riddled with data, and riddled with data that has to be accurate. And this is astounding to me. We generally take it for granted. We just assume
yep.
that it's there, it's right. And the future, the success in the future will be very much driven by an appreciation for the complexity of data, the complexity of data accuracy, and that it doesn't just happen. You have to make it happen. You know, computer systems are not like a light switch. You don't just turn them on and they work every time. What happens if they don't? What are you going to do? What happens if your systems fail? What are you going to do? What's your backup strategy? How are you going to implement it? You know, we talk to people around the country all the time, and we sometimes get into these questions, and we're astounded by what the answer is because, we'll get to that later.
We'll think about that later. We're focusing on just getting the production in the door. Don't confuse us with all these other.
Exactly.
You know,
and can you say kaboom? You know, this is one of those things where if it doesn't keep people up at night, it should, because it certainly keeps me up at night worrying about some of this stuff, because people are sitting on a ticking time bomb and don't understand it. They've got to get their data right. Don't assume just because the report looks good. Be careful about the data. If you're making decisions about your business based on data, you've got to make sure the data is accurate. Otherwise, garbage in, garbage out. Just because the report looks good does not mean the underlying data is accurate. So I know it feels like I'm beating a dead horse here. And by the way, if the horse really was dead, do you think it would care that I'm beating it? But so just
great. Good point.
So, you know, people, we gotta. The future is coming. We can be embracing the future. It's exciting to hear what you're going to say next, Dave. Every company should have a systematic method of periodically testing data accuracy. And if you don't know how to do that, if you're not sure about your manual processes or your automated interfaces, you know, we'll help. We'll help you figure it out. But do it. Take the steps. Do something
to
make sure it's right.
Yep.
And you'll be amazed at what you find. And it's essential. It's essential. It's foundational for the future. Accurate data for call reports, financial reports, pipeline, payroll, everything.
Yep.
And Dave, I've beat my dead horse all the way. I'm done.
That's funny.
That's the problem.
Does a dead horse know that it's being beaten? That's, that may be your new famous quote here, folks. It's so good. Andy, thanks so much for bringing it to us. I mean, there's the call reports, a lot of data out there. I mean, let's start using the data. It's there. We got to turn it in. What are we doing with it? Great point. And then the financial planning and forecasting. Excellent points. Thank you so much, Profit Doctor.
My Andy pleasure, Schell. Dave.
We look forward to getting more of your thoughts in the next segment. Folks, we're going to be talking about the future mortgage banking right after this break. We'll be back.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan,
if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success, Mortgage Banking Solutions, primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Good to have you back with us. This is David Licken. It is June 13th, and we're broadcasting, or at least I'm broadcasting live from Sedona, the Hilton Spa and Resort here. It's a great place. Wish you could all be up here with me. Spectacular views. And I'm going to be talking here in just a few hours, addressing all the attendees here about the future of mortgage banking. And if you were here, you'd hear my opening slide go. It's the theme or the song, and I forget who just wrote it, Andy, or you'll have to remind me, but it's War. What is it good for? I'm going to be opening up to that music. And we're going to talk about so much of our industry, as Alice reports to us each and every week, so much of our being in business right now seems like it's just been dealing with all the incoming regulatory missiles guided at us. And there was a hilarious article that was sent out to me I have to look this up real fast to see if I can't find it, but it was an article about the newest legislation, and I can't bring it up right now, I'm not going to get into it, but it's basically something Americans with No Abilities Act, and you know, I sent it around to Alice. It is hilarious. If you're interested in getting this, it is basically a new subsidy for program for anyone who is mediocre or below, and it seemed absurd. The point of writing the article, whoever wrote this was just genius, was that, you know, it seems like we're subsidizing so many things and we're trying to correct the things that are trying to get working again in the economy, and it does seem a lot for many mortgage bankers to be war.
But one of the key things we're going to be doing in this my presentation is we're going to be doing, as we look at the future at mortgage banking, I think we need to take an honest SWOT analysis. A SWOT analysis, again, SWOT is an acronym for strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. And we're going to be talking, I will be talking about each one of those things. So let's get our regular guests on the program, Alice, Joe, and Andy, back into the dialogue. And I'd love to get your thoughts as we go to sharing some of this in the content. I think the thing that we talk about is the people. One of our strengths, our greatest strength, I think, in this industry is really the people. And Alice, I want to go out to you. You fly around the country. We all are working with our industry, but there is just something about the people in this mortgage industry this industry attracts a type of people that there's just a level of intelligence. They're risk takers. They're comfortable with risk. They're fun to be around. You go to these conferences. You can understand why you enjoy this industry because you get around the people, and they're just a blast to be around. Alice, I know you travel around. Would you agree with that statement?
Oh, I would absolutely agree. And, you know, you really do, like you said, Dave, there's some very intelligent people around that I think that, and like you're saying, this is a strength that we have in the industry today. And we need to all rally together, share information, and, you know, like I keep saying, respond to the rules and be active. We have to see that strength and make good use of it.
Well, I think one of the things I get into in weakness, by the way, our producer, Andy Alvey, Drew's just gave me the word. He says Edwin Starr was the guy that wrote the music, War. So for that, thank you, Drew, for bringing that to my ear. It is the people, but it's us. Are we doing some things? So we really get into some of the weaknesses we're going to be talking about. But I think the other, if we continue on the strengths for just a little bit, one of the strengths that is so important to understand is that we have an industry. We're an industry that supports the housing market. Our industry is at the DNA of our economy. Joe talks about all the aspects, all the things that are going on. There is not a single item, and this is a strength to our industry, there's not a single aspect of this economy that will not be touched if we can get the housing moving again. Housing is not going to get moving without a mortgage industry. So we're going to be talking a little bit about the strengths as it relates to that. The other thing, the American dream. Americans right now, it's one of the most American fundamental rights, and consumers need us more than ever. And you're going to the audience are going to hear me talk to me why. It's because America is more leveraged than ever before. There's less liquidity in the marketplace, or in consumers have less liquidity, so they're going to need financing. There's not a lot of chance people are going to be out paying cash for homes at this much unless they've done real, real well. But it's such a finite percentage of people that are buying homes that are going to be living in them. Average consumer needs financing because of a lack of liquidity. And I think what's happened is so many credit issues have come up as a result of this last credit cycle. People have just, that would plan well, just have gotten caught with layoffs, jobs going down. We do have more credit issues than ever before. So consumers need us. We could go on and on about it. And I think more the biggest overriding factor that's keeping so many people, to have reason home sales are down as they are, is because there's just an overriding fear about the unsettledness of where are we going economically. So we as an industry, one of the strengths we can bring is, and what we have is, we're a positive group. I'm making this pretty bold statement. Any economic recovery was going to start with a mortgage recovery. And I think that's probably one of the more significant points that we really need to focus on. Going over to the weaknesses, let's cover our weaknesses quickly, and then I'm going to go through each one of these real fast, and then I want to get Joe and Andy and Alice to really comment and jump in on all of these. I think one of our weaknesses is leadership. We as an industry, we as a nation for that matter, really struggle in the area of leadership. I have not had effective leaders. If anything, our leadership has become the poster child of greed. I'm thinking of Angela Mazzello. I wrote about this recently in one of Tony Garitano's articles. I wrote an article with Progress in Lending and published it. We have had leaders, but unfortunately, and we look to many of these leaders as a positive thing. They look positive, but it turned out that in the end, the final analysis is that they become the poster child of what everything was wrong about our industry. Financial management, Profit Doctor talks about this each and every week, how we So many companies struggle to have a loan-level accounting and do forecasting. That's a weakness of our industry. We're not doing it. It's something that's so easy to fix, too. Another area that's a weakness I'll be talking about is higher capital requirements. I mean, it used to be $250,000 to get you approved, the Fannie, Freddie, HUD, Ginnie Mae. And today, it's $2.5 million pretty much across the board with all of these. And if you may be grandfathered in, as Alice has talked about, with $1 million net worth. But for many, it is going up. And, I mean, it is going up. And for many, they're not going to be able to make it. What's really interesting is that Alice and her crew did an analysis in 2009, December of 2009, there was nearly 13,000 HUD-approved companies. And it's now down because of net worth requirements rising, and there has been an overall attrition in the industry. That the HUD officials just gave me this information. We're down to less than 3,000, and it's going down to 1,300 rapidly as they step it up to the next levels. And most likely, HUD is predicting that there are going to be less than 1,000 HUD-approved companies with the new higher requirements if they do not raise. And that's just based on the net worth requirement. So there's certainly a contraction that's taking place. I think that can turn around and be a positive because there's capital out there and you can go get it. We'll be talking about that. The cost of doing business is another weakness in our industry. I think one of the bigger ones, though, is the fact that we as an industry seem to be more in denial or delusional or that regarding the regulations, we're just not being effective going out there and doing and challenging the things that are going on. Also, public relations, we do have a PR crisis in our industry. It's a real challenge. It's something that we must address. One of the things that are opportunities I go into, I was talking to an investment banker that is looking at making a substantial investments into the mortgage industry, and he used this analogy. He says, Dave, let me just sum up my reason for wanting to put hundreds of millions of dollars in the mortgage industry. He says all the shrimp boats sank. He's obviously making a reference to the Forrest Gump movie. Andy covered this on the Profit Doctor a few segments ago. Significant market contraction, and as a result of that, we are seeing just a real opportunity because so many have exited the business, have been forced out of business, filed bankruptcy, gone away, that even though the market is contracting, there is a greater exodus than the rate at which people are leaving the industry, whether it be individuals or companies, that is exceeding the rate at which volume is dropping. So while I think we are looking very seriously at some point in time when the market flattens and starts taking off, that we're going to have a capacity crisis. So I'm also saying the weaknesses also represent the opportunity. If we have poor leadership, become a leader. You could turn that into an opportunity. Higher net worth requirements, you could go out and get the necessary capital. The cost to do business, will get a variable cost model. Figure out how to do it. Listen to the Profit Doctor more. It'll get you more towards a variable cost, which I think is essential as we look at the productions, the dips. Joe talks about that each and every week about what could happen to production and where we're going to be going. Delusional, well, you know what? It's just really just get informed. Start listening to Alice's comments on Lickin' on Lending and just stay informed and then do more than just that. Be proactive, which is the last point, public relations. But I think the thing that we get into is about threats. One of the things I'm predicting here is I think there's more regulation coming on at us. I'm just saying deal with it. Sorry I have to say it like that, but just deal with it. You've got to deal with it. QRM, we're going to be seeing some twists and turns in that. We're going to talk about that in just a minute. Litigation, I think, represents one of the most significant threats to our industry. Already, I talked about this a few weeks ago, but one of our clients, I've been saying this is going to be potentially happening as a result of all the regulations coming into the marketplace. I've been saying that the plaintiff bar, I refer to it as the underbelly of the legal industry. I'm sure the plaintiff attorneys don't particularly care for that characterization, but that's that part of the bar, the lawyers, that part of the lawyer in the law industry that goes out and seeks opportunities to prey on companies, and they sue them, and they're looking for deep pockets, and they have started the process. One of my clients faxed me a letter that is being mailed out to all of their clients, and what they're doing, all their customers. And it's you may have been wrong, you may have done this, all this implications about what they did. Now, fortunately, this company is really one of the better-run companies, and even better, and something a bit of an aberration, not the norm, is they have outstanding relationships with their, all the borrowers. They communicate with them on a regular basis, something we've been talking about forever. As a result of them having long-term and good relationships with their with the consumers that they've been working with, one of the consumers that got this letter from a law firm that was going out trying to draw that consumer and other of their this company's customers into a lawsuit, class action lawsuit, sent the letter to the mortgage company and alerted them that this is going on. It is going on, and we're going to see a lot of litigation, so it's important that you reach out and touch your customers and that we deal with this head on. There's three basic strategies we're not going to get into in this broadcast. We may get into it in another broadcast because it really goes into quite a bit of depth. But there's three basic strategies, if this is happening, that you can employ to get into it. I think the bigger overriding thing is something that Joe talks about regularly, is the overall economic effects, the continued woes that could be coming at us and at our industry. We're going to be, I think economically, if in fact we have a double dip recession, I think a couple of people said double dip. I didn't think the last one ended. And I think we're at a place where it is, in fact, it's possible that we could find ourselves in a situation where we're going to continue to see economic woes in the doldrums. Last week they were talking about housing, and there's a front page article again on the USA Today that was at the doorstep of my hotel here, talking about should you move out, should you stay, what should you do when your home is underwater. Really interesting statistics. CoreLogic just put out some information last week that 68%, was it 63% homes in Nevada are underwater, 50% of the homes in Arizona are underwater, and it went through Arizona, I mean, Florida was another one of them. It was really interesting. Interesting, Washington, D.C. was the only place where there's home appreciations, and it was a double digit, and guess why that is? The Obama administration is hiring everybody and their uncle, and they're buying up homes because employment is good at the hands of the federal government. There's what some of my talking points are. Now let's get into Alice, Joe, and Andy, and kind of really get into a bit of a dialogue. Listeners, we have a pre-call every before we do our radio program. We get on and we talk about what we're talking about. I wish I could have taken that conversation we had just before this call about some of these talking points, specifically regulation, and brought that and recorded that and brought that to you live. It was just such a good dynamic. So let's get that going. One of the things that you heard, Joe, was something, an interview by Jamie Dimon, or was it an interview? What was that, Joe, that with Jamie Dimon and Bernanke?
Well, I'm sure lots of people have seen that. It was a Bernanke speech where he was making a speech to a lot of the heads of some of the banking industry, and Jamie Dimon took the opportunity to ask a question, but in doing so, he listed the number of things that have changed in the industry already, and essentially the elimination of subprime lending, the elimination of credit default swaps, and some of the more exotic Wall Street concoctions, and he ended the question after a long litany of those kind of comments with the question of, will we at the when this is reviewed 20 years from now, will history determine that we've gone too far with regulation?
And that's the question we're going to get into. I want to tee that up. We got to take a quick break. We'll be right back after this brief break.
PMI Mortgage Insurance Company is the clear choice for your higher LTV conventional borrowers. Unlike FHA, PMI offers a choice of flexible premium plans to fit the individual needs of each borrower. From a one-time upfront cost with no renewal premium to a monthly plan with no upfront charges, PMI's premium plans recognize larger down payment and good credit history, saving your clients what can at times be thousands of dollars. PMI also provides lenders with fast electronic submission tools to increase efficiencies. Mortgage insurance is more relevant than ever, so it's important to utilize a mortgage insurer who's committed to the business for the long term. It is vital that you work with a company whose core competency is credit risk management and bring that wealth of knowledge to your firm. At PMI, mortgage insurance is their only business, so they have to get it right. PMI's mission is to create sustainable homeownership opportunities. To learn more about how PMI solutions can assist your business, please contact your PMI representative today or call 800-966-4PMI, 800-966-4PMI. In today's climate, quality counts more than ever.
and Wetzel's Trot can help your company maintain the quality that you require to survive in an ever-changing market. With over 450 customers across the country, Wetzel's Trot has specialized in quality control reviews for residential lenders since 1985. Wetzel's Trot can assist your organization in maintaining a high standard of quality within your residential mortgage operation. They offer a wide variety of services, including loan quality control, servicing quality control, quality control plans, fraud review services, and even web-based quality control software. Quality is never an accident. It is always the result of high intention, sincere effort, intelligent direction, and skillful execution. Choosing Wetzel's Trot represents the wise choice of many alternatives. Contact Wetzel's Trot today for details at 248-592-2252. Wetzel's Trot, the single source solution for your quality control needs.
And now, broadcasting live from Austin, Texas, we're back with the Lickin' on Lending Show.
Good to have you back. When we left, we had Joe was just talking about his comments of Jamie Dimon and the question he teed up. Joe, cover that. Tee that question up one more time. I want to get some feedback. There was a great discussion before the program started on this point.
Well, it had to do with all the things that have changed already, and now that we're the pendulum swung so far toward more regulation. He asked Bernanke, will history judge that we've gone too far? And then he also asked, what, if anyone, has have you done to determine the overall consequence of all the regulation? And surprisingly, Bernanke admitted that no one had done an overall assessment of the impact of all these regulations, and in fact, they didn't have the tools to do so. So,
I mean, isn't that astounding? I mean, that's an astounding response. Here we are, we're passing all this regulation. Alice and her team have to stay on top of it. And they go on, and we really don't have the resources to evaluate the consequences of it. That's astounding.
Well, it's something we've all been through. Those of us who have been through, have been a long time in the mortgage industry, have seen the pendulum swing, and it's no question it swung, and it's way, way too far toward the side of over-regulation, and it will swing back. My hopes are that we don't get it, we don't get so much in the market now in the form of new rules and regulations that we're unable to get back. And as an example, and Dave, you might not have wanted to go here, but I think it's so critical because QRM's out there right now.
Yep.
And there's lots of comment going on right now that right now, under the changing regulation, we have a chance of losing the secondary market.
Yes.
I truly believe that we're Fannie and Freddie going away, which is going to happen, and we lose a lot. Right now, we have the most efficient mortgage investment delivery process in the world. And if we can retain that, there have been tremendous benefits that have come from it with consistency, with standard underwriting, with standard documentation, the ability to hedge your pipeline, the ability to lock a customer. We've got to make sure that we don't let those regulations swing so far that we lose that secondary market.
That is so important. And there's a great parallel to what's going on here. And Alice is listening to an NPR program, Fresh Air, earlier. Alice, tell us about that book you heard, that interview. It was a rebroadcast of an interview. If you could share that, because I want our listeners to go out and read and listen, or buy that book, download it, and listen to it.
Well, I guess you could say that there's a relationship between alcohol and the mortgage industry.
Well, certainly many would say it's
correct. I don't know, some people strongly believe that. You can't have one without the other. But the book was called Last Call, and actually, I apologize, the author's name was Daniel, and I just lost my web link on that. But in any case,
it's
the book is Last Call.
It's O-K-R-E-N-T, I think is what you said.
Oh, yeah, Oakrent.
Oakrent.
And this morning, you know, he talked about how prohibition came in really due to political issues, and I won't bore you with all of those details, but what I found very interesting at the end of the interview was the comments that he made that so related to the mortgage industry that, you know, Joe, you say, I hope we don't have QRM for too long. Well, you know, the amendment to prohibit alcohol went in place, and then it was 13 years later before they could repeal it. So it took a long time for the people with the common sense to know this isn't helping anything, you know, to make this all the other issues that came as a result of prohibition. But from the mortgage side, he made comments about the fact of the people who are proactive to the change get the energy, and those who want things to stay the same don't necessarily react the way they should in order to keep things the same.
Right.
And I was getting that same feeling here, that what we have is great. The market corrected itself, and really it started in 2006 when the pay option arm started to go high, and if you look at the Fed funds rate in 2006, it was rising, and that had an impact on people's ability to repay those option arms and the recasting, and so therefore we had higher defaults, and the market reacted. The market corrected the product and said, hey, we don't want to keep doing those. Now we really see the risk in those. And, you know, it took us a while to react. Well, so Congress, what I believe is a minority of people trying to say that we need to have this QRM. The majority
sees
the problem, and we have to speak up. Yeah.
Absolutely. Andy, on the pre-call, the pre-program call, you made up some great comments. I'm just going to bring you in and make the comments you feel comfortable making. There was some great commentary. I wish we were just going to record that.
Yeah, Dave, we really don't have time because you still got to go to Tony, and I do have a couple quick points I want to make, and that's that something you said earlier about what are mortgage people, and I just wanted to say that mortgage people are people that like to help people's dreams come true.
Right.
Because without us, they don't. And it really, the dialogue on the QRM, and we all agree there's too much regulation. The other thing I wanted to comment on is you had talked about the sand and desert states having declines. Well, that's only 6% of the country. 47 states didn't. And right now in Austin, Google just leased 100,000 square feet of space, and there are no homes in my subdivision for sale.
Yep.
So the economic issues on real estate that you're seeing, I think, are localized. At least in Austin, things are doing well, and the opportunities for mortgage banking to continue growing are strong, and the opportunities for people to be successful in mortgage banking, I think, will continue to be strong for years to come.
And isn't it interesting that Texas has got one of the most favorable places? There was an article on Fox, or an interview on Fox, that I don't want to spend much time on. I want to get right out to Tony here in just 2 seconds. But it's because of our tax base. We do not tax industry to death like they're trying to do in California. Let's bring Tony Garitano in on the discussion. It's good to have you with us, Tony, as you bring us an update. There were some things that you had emailed me talking about QRM and what is relevant about that. Bring us an update on some of the things related to QRM that you're seeing.
Well, good to be on the program, Dave. Thank you. I think QRM is important, obviously, because it's going to change the business dynamically, as you've mentioned throughout the program.
Hopefully, we'll repeal it. I don't know if we're going to repeal it, but we're going to do something. But how do we act it? There's business intelligent technology out there.
There is, and I think business intelligence makes the saying knowledge is power and turns that into, you know, more like knowledge is survival, and knowledge is a competitive edge. And what you need to do is translate your processes and your tolerances into a rules engine that can get you back that business intelligence through graphical dashboarding like Andy talked about earlier.
Yep.
In the program, because if you know how many of your loans are, you know, or meet the QRM tolerance, how many don't, then you can better plan going forward.
It's those KPIs. It's really knowing your key performance indicators, having a dashboard up there. So tell me about give us a real brief few words. For those that are not familiar with business intelligence technologies, is there any examples that come to mind real quickly?
The best example that I have, I mean, there are two that I know of that I cover a lot, are Motivity Solutions is one, and Helm Analytics is another. They do a really good job, as do, I'm sure, a host of others. But I would definitely say look into those two vendors and see how you can translate your knowledge into business intelligence that you can use to better control your pipeline and your business.
It's great. The drums are telling us, Tony, we're out of time. And I know we have one more question to go, but we're not going to be able to get to it this week. We'd love to have you pick this up next week when you're back on. Tony, be sure to go out there and log into progressinlending.com. It's a great place for getting more update and information. Folks, it's so good to have you be with us each and every week. Tune in. Tell your friends about it. We're thrilled to have you be a part of the radio program. Tell others about it. and have a great week. Think of me up here in Sedona. I wish you could all be up here and take a look at these views. Have a great week, everybody.
This has been Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week and thank you for listening.